This show furnished by Sid Levine.
Oh yeah, Tower of Power. Oh yeah. Oil in the ground, 1970s. That's music. Sid Levine, the Sid Levine Show. We are wonderfully happy to be back on the big game night. I won't say anything about the big game, even though I am from Lowell, Massachusetts. Okay. So, we have an incredible amount of amazing people here today. The amount is amazing.
Good stuff, that's it.
We have David Sunderland, a phenomenal actor, but even a better person. He's a great guy. Amazing, just knowledge of wealth. Wealth of knowledge. Why am I saying that backwards? Anyways.
I'll take it either way.
Either way, yes. And we have joining us, and this is a tremendous treat for me, because she has helped us on this show so many times, getting America's Finest Marines, and she is a sergeant in the Marine Corps. We have Jessica Quesada.
Hi.
How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm fantastic this evening.
You look fantastic yourself. You look great. Thank you so much. Oh, it's the hair. Yeah, me too.
Comes with the uniform, but.
Oh, okay. And then we have Brad Calhoun. Brad, a former pastor, an amazing actor, a great guy. I'm so happy that everybody showed up here instead of watching the big game.
Hi, Sid. Thank you very much for having us this evening. What a special evening, and it's always great to be here.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Brad. And David and Brad are returning guests. They did our Christmas show, which was fantastic. And then we get to Liz.
Oh.
Liz Fuller.
Haha, I'm back.
The tantalizing. Tumultuous.
What is that word?
Tootsie. Titillating.
Oh, dear.
Liz Fuller. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Sid. What a week it's been, huh?
Yes, what a week. Is that clapping or rain? Oh, okay.
Are you going to tell us about your birthday cake that you received in the last few days?
Oh, my God, what a...
Another cake. That's been 2 weeks we've been celebrating.
I don't know how many cakes I've had. I'm trying to lose weight, and people keep giving me the cakes. And, well, I don't know if it was exactly that, but I either had a really bad stomach flu or I don't know what. But all I can tell you is that, you know, the song we just played was Oil in the Ground while
okay.
I was Sid in the toilet.
Okay, Sid, I'm going to give the phone number out for anybody listening this week. Let's move on from that. It's 1-800-222-5222. I'm going to say it again because I know there's some listeners that do want to give us a call this week.
Sure.
And we will remember to take those calls. So here's the number again. Grab a pen or dial it in your phone. It's 1-800-222-5222.
And I want to give a shout out to Allie. Allie is new with us. She's doing the live stream on Facebook. She's going to be helping me out in the office. Hi, Allie.
Hi.
All right. So let's jump right into it here. Jessica, Sergeant, Marine Corps. How long have you been in the Marine Corps?
5 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, just over 5 years.
Obviously you love it, huh?
I do. I do. There's a tremendous amount of experience that I've had in this short time, and I'm definitely looking forward to several years more to, you know.
What's your position in the Marine? What do you do?
So my original job, I'm a combat correspondent, which is essentially a photojournalist in the Marine Corps. I go and I tell the Marine Corps story, depending on what unit I'm assigned with, more specifically. But it's really just taking photos, writing stories, doing interviews, working with the media and whatnot. Now I serve in this billet as a marketing and public affairs director. So I essentially handle the marketing, advertising, kind of public affairs aspects for all of the Marines, specifically recruiters in Orange County. So it's a pretty cool job.
It's a big day, though, isn't it? Isn't there a new TV commercial or something today released?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I'm super excited. I know I don't want to talk about the game so much, but we're really excited to see today in the game earlier that a new release of our commercial just went live during the Super Bowl. It's for Nation's Call. And so it's kind of a series of the Battles Won campaign from Battle Up to Anthem and then this Nation's Call, which it's really really cool. I'll show you guys during the break. It kind of depicts like this, the Marine Ground Air Task Force, the MAGTAF essentially, and the force that comes with Marines and what our capabilities are, you know, from aircraft on ships and the infantrymen.
That's great.
And it kind of all disappears and you just see like what the Marines are. And it's, you can have all these types of equipment essentially to move forward in any battle, but it's kind of like that fighting spirit that makes us win battles.
So do the Marines come to you, the men and women come to you and say, I would like to do certain things for PR, or do you go to them?
I try to reach out and go to them because not a lot of people know about the Marine Corps, or know how we advertise or what we do and why we do it. And we work with J. Walter Thompson, who is our leading agency, and it's been our leading agency in our advertising for the Marine Corps since, you know, forever.
Yeah, they've been around forever,
and they've done a phenomenal job at just telling the story. And everybody understands that there's several branches in the military, but we are very secluded in our brand and our messaging and our theme because it's so unique to everyone else. So,
well, that's fantastic. I'm so happy to have you here. You are really good at what you do.
Thank you. Yeah,
you've helped us so much.
It's fun to be. It's really cool to do this. Not many Marines get to go live on a radio show.
I want to ask. I mean, we've obviously had some other Marines here that were the guys, right? So it's fascinating to look at a woman that wanted to join the Marines. Take us back to kind of your teenage years and what made you, and how did you find out about it, and how did you sign up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I joined straight out of high school. I went to a really great arts magnet school in downtown Dallas, and I wanted to study photography, more specific photojournalism. And I got accepted to a school in New York, and I was gung-ho about going to school, but I didn't feel like I wanted to sit in a chair any longer. I kind of wanted to go out and do things. And it's great as a student to do that, but like I was telling these gentlemen earlier, I just didn't have, I don't think I had the maturity to go to college. And you still need that. Otherwise, you see a lot of kids that drop out. And so I looked at the military as a background, as a backup plan, because I saw it in some parts of my life, like my brother wanted to be a Marine and whatnot, and he didn't become a Marine. And so when he found out I was going to be a Marine, he was really upset. he's jealous to this day. He won't talk to me. But, so yeah, I looked at all the branches and I found out you could be a photojournalist in the military, but I looked at the Marine Corps and I was like, wow, this is something that I can relate to. There's like a sisterhood, a brotherhood, a fierceness to it. And, I don't know. I saw that and I was like, why not? You know, I could be a photojournalist in the Marine Corps.
Well, let me just say that I've always admired the military. It's an honor to be with you, Jessica.
Thank you.
And I'd like to tell the audience that not only is Jessica a lovely young lady, but you can tell she's fit. I mean, she's like a strong young lady. I'm sure you do weight training. I mean, to stay. Tell me what it was like as a woman to go through basic training. Because, I mean, a lot of guys even don't make it through basic training, but you did.
So only 7% of women actually serve in the Marine Corps. And,
right.
You know, when ladies go to Parris Island in South Carolina, all women go there for recruit training. And so we do exactly what the men do, the type of regimens and the classes that we have. And it's a lot more instructional than you think. Mm-hmm. I mean, we learn about history, traditions, drill. It's not just us running around and you know, trying to be combat ready all the time. That's a part of it, but it's essentially learning about the Marine Corps in a very educational way. But the things that were physically demanding, I mean, I was barely 115 pounds, 5'4". I was a tiny little thing, but I pushed through, and I think there was a lot of times that you feel mentally like you're going to break down. It's not the physical aspect of boot camp. It's the mental aspect of it. And I think that's how you weed out the people who want to join the Marine Corps, is that mental kind of fighting spirit that everybody discovers at boot camp.
Like those who are not going to quit.
That are not going to quit. They have that indomitable spirit, and they fight through it, and they earn the title essentially. So it's tough.
Well, I thank you for your service. That's just amazing.
We need that spirit in Hollywood. I need it for my clients. That they never give up. No matter what happens, they fight and fight and fight until they get to part. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Brad, how tall are you?
I'm 6'6".
Tall, huh?
And what actor do you look like?
Well, I think it's Brian Dennehy. And for all the producers out there who are looking for the next Brian Dennehy, I refer you to Sid's phone number.
All right. So you do really look like him. I mean, you have his build and you really look like him.
Yeah.
In your head and your heart, does that help or hurt you, you think?
Well, I think mostly John Wayne was 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
I'm 6'6". I walk into the audition room, and they're either looking for 6'6", or they are not. So I think being a character actor and being at this age and stage of my life, I think it's a very, very specific kind of look that they want. You were very good. To me, I was able to go and audition for American Sniper. And they were looking for the scene for the opening of the movie and the chapel and the pastor reading, et cetera, et cetera. And I walk in, and it was a lovely audition, and the vibes were all, you know, very good. And they chose, ultimately, someone from your stable, Sid. And he's 31 years old. And so there was just this broad, broad idea of who they wanted to have as that pastor. But that is very, it's a good example of what I experience in the audition room, either for commercials or for theatrical. It's either a fit or it immediately is not. So there's most of the time there's something to overcome because of the size.
Now, David, you booked a commercial, what was it?
It was Samsung.
A Samsung.
Global commercial.
And you played, what was the character?
The character was the
Warren Jeffs.
The head of a cult, the head of a aquatic cult.
That, like that guy Warren Jeffs.
Exactly, yeah. It was directed by Andreas Nielsen, who's one of the top commercial directors in Hollywood, and it was through Biscuit Filmworks, all lovely people. Now, we had a great time.
They told me that you were perfect as a guy that ran a cult.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll take that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
So thinking about that... I'm just wondering that you said, gee, you know, I really look like this character. How does that affect you? Do you think that hurts you or helps you? Or?
Well, you know, Sid, as you know, I'm a character actor, but I've done a diverse, you know, spectrum of work. I've played like a German priest. As a matter of fact, Michael Donovan, you know, the theater casting director, just recently had me in to play a transgender woman for a play called Hollywood Divas from Hell, where three females were competing for the role of Norma Desmond in the remake of Sunset Boulevard. Mm. And there Michael calls me in. I'm wearing a beautiful dress. I've got my hair made up. My wife does me. And I'm standing there giving my best shot. So
that's a great story.
That's great.
What you'll do for the next role, right?
I don't know, Brad.
I'll play anything.
I don't know, Brad, if we're going to do that with you.
I don't think that would work with me.
6'6", you'd be a big, strong woman. You're definitely not wearing those.
The high heels, though, Sid, that was the tough part.
That was the tough part.
That was the tough part.
All right. Switching to another. So let me ask you, Jessica. In the Marines, and let me ask you, Brad, because you were a pastor and you had quite a congregation, and you must have run across servicemen and women in your career as a pastor.
Yes.
How does that work? Everybody's religious beliefs are, of course, respected. Let's say somebody is kosher. What happens, let's say, in a commissary, or what do you do?
That's really difficult to answer, just because myself, I'm not very a religious person, but I know that, so each command has a chaplain, essentially. And even more specific to different religions, you may need a rabbi or you know, a different type of individual to cater to your religious needs. And we have those types of individuals, and their, you know, specific duty is to serve service members. They're essentially in the Navy, but they can also help out Marines.
Really?
Yeah. So they're U.S. Navy chaplains. And so they can, you know, service us to whatever we need, essentially, and we can speak to them at any point in time. We're never barred from speaking to the chaplain. And if you say you need to speak to the chaplain, like that that's up to your command. Just be like, oh, okay.
Jessica, you know. It's my understanding that the dog tags used to have a mm-hmm. in a part what your faith was.
Right.
Do, mm-hmm. do they still do that?
Not to my recollection.
Do you guys still wear dog tags?
We do. We must maintain one on us at all times.
Okay.
Essentially, I'm in a dress uniform. I'm not wearing mine. But we always have them when we're in camis, and they're specifically for identification purposes, especially when you're forward deployed.
Just
so,
like name, rank, and
yeah,
serial number.
Yeah, okay. So the basic information. I know it used to have their social security number on there. They definitely took that off. So it was little aspects like that.
So when you're deployed, mm-hmm. does the chaplain go with
yes.
you?
Yes. Yes, they
goes
do. And I actually learned this just this past year. We have this educators workshop where we bring teachers, community influencers, educators, even media representatives to attend like a week-long kind of boot camp, and they bring out the chaplain to speak to these educators and let them know, because you know, for a lot of people they may not think that service members are given the opportunity to be open-minded to their religion, which is the complete opposite. And that's when I learned that they have all of these different representatives for each type of religion. And so it's really awesome to see that, you know, if you need those specific you know, aspects or, you know, mm-hmm. prayers or certain people to talk to and pray with, like they'll help you out. So
that's
it's
great.
Really cool.
And Brad, in your career as a pastor, did you ever run across or have you ever had dealings with the military in religion?
Many of the congregants in the churches that I served were either active duty or reserve, primarily reserve. Obviously, the active duty people would be deployed often. It certainly, I want to echo what Jessica just said. It really is a service that is provided for service people's individual faith and a diversity of faith. Where I think we get into some quicksand and some difficult waters is when we want to talk about a particular cause that any given country has as being God's cause, as being related or somehow a country is working out a cause that God has somehow ordained. That's when I think we start to get into trouble, and we start misusing the faith that we might have personally. And we start abusing our own personal faith by then claiming that the faith perspective that we might have is the singular understanding of what the country is doing on behalf of God. And this goes all the way back to Charlemagne. Augustine wrote about it. It has a long history of controversy, having to do with what is our understanding when we go to war, for instance. Is that war something that God wants us to do, or is that something created by human beings? And, you know, that we could do 5 one-hour shows on the topic that I just talked about. But the main point I'm trying to make is there's a huge role for individuals to be supported in their own personal faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which chaplains of various faiths support that, worship services, counseling sessions, group studies, et cetera, and then the dividing line is getting into the very, very controversial realm of, you know, does God approve of war?
Brad, can I piggyback on that? because I was just thinking, I have a lot of friends in the military and who are Christians. And the big thing that they were worried about is in the Old Testament, it says, thou shalt not kill. And so they're worried about that when they go into war, but they're given a great deal of peace because that the actual correct translation is thou shalt not murder. Now there's a big difference between killing, represent your country, and murder, which would mm-hmm. be, you know, taking out an innocent person. So that's the faith thing. I hope that kind of goes with what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I just came back from New York City. It was my first visit to Ground Zero.
Oh, that's moving, isn't it?
It is a very, very moving and sacred place.
Yeah. I think they did a great job with the whole monument there.
Amazing. It's, with the
yeah.
water and the design
the energy,
of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And it what struck me as a pastor, I was standing there and I was feeling feelings of anger. of revenge, of rage. How dare this happen to our country? And then that part of me that has dedicated much of my life to the faith said, wow, there's such an inner struggle between loving our neighbor and feeling so violated. And these feelings become very visceral when you're standing at Ground Zero. I also had similar feelings. You know, Clint Eastwood made these two fabulous movies about Iwo Jima and the Iwo Jima Memorial in Arlington. Mm-hmm. I have the same kind of inner feeling, struggle, conflict. And my dad fought in World War II. And so I don't think any of us can claim sainthood when it comes to this deeper topic. I think all of us feel this tension between wanting to be a good, loving, honest, integral person, but at the same time, we have this human side of us that says, don't tread on me.
And there is, and I believe that that lives in all of us, especially as service members and Marines, you know, and I feel whether I'm doing a huge part for my country at, you know, serving on the front lines if I ever did, or even the minimal aspects of just paperwork. At a certain extent, you understand that you're doing something for the greater good of your country. And that's always going to, I feel like, be the forefront emotion to situations like that. And I actually went to Iwo Jima. That was that photograph, the flag raising by Joe Rosenthal, that image that was captured in the videography and the photographs that he captured that day. That was what inspired me to join the Marine Corps, because I looked at the other branches. I was like, there's nothing monumental about them. That image, like, I knew that even at high school. I was like, oh, I've seen that before. That's beautiful. Like, that moment itself changed the entire stance of where we were as a nation fighting in World War II, just their mindsets and you know, their motivation to get through that battle. And that's something that I wanted to do and to capture it. And, you know, I haven't captured that moment yet, but I feel like that's something that I'm going to want to do at some point. But that's kind of this, you know, the same thing.
I also don't want to suggest that, you know, that cause when we go to war, that it's always this kind of neutral situation and only an ethical situation. There's no question that in the history of the United States of America, we have gone to war quite rightly to fight evil. Clear evil. When Hitler and Mussolini and, you know, created the Axis powers and wanted to dominate the world, and their behavior was abysmal, and we quite rightly went and fought evil. So this is not to say that people of faith should not or could not fight in the military and fight wars, and civilians in their own way contributed to that war effort. But as we learned in Vietnam, it's not always that clear-cut. And we just look to the current movie, The Post, and we look to the Daniel Ellsberg release of the Pentagon Papers, and we quickly find out that our government, now fact-based, our government, lied to the country about the efficacious nature of hundreds of thousands of men and women serving in Vietnam. And we don't have to go down that road too much further to realize that it's not always cut and dry. It's not always black and white.
We have just a few seconds to go here before the break. And I want to thank again Sergeant Jessica Quesada for coming here. This is great. And David and Brad and Liz and Allie and myself. So we will be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned. This is an interesting show.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
life. Can something that's truly stylish be truly durable? Yes, when it's the Home Depot's exclusive Delta Everly Widespread Bath Faucet in Spot Shield Brush Nickel. It's at a new lower price of $129. You save $20. Its soft, modern design means timeless beauty. Its Spot Shield finish means there are less spots and less cleaning. The exclusive Delta Everly Faucet, now just $129 during the Winter Kitchen and Bath event at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through March 7th while supplies last.
Results may vary, not a solicitation for legal services. If you owe the IRS back taxes, payroll taxes, or have not filed your returns, the IRS will get you. They can take your property, take you to court, even put you in jail. With one call to WAL, you'll never need to talk to the IRS again. Our average client settles for about 10% of what is owed. We offer free face-to-face consultations in your local area. Call 800-727-0433. That's 800-727-0433.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Race fans, the O'Reilly Auto Parts 500 at Texas Motor Speedway is Sunday, April 8th. And now you can earn a free O'Reilly Auto Parts 500 commemorative hat by mail. Just pick up a rebate form at O'Reilly Auto Parts and make a purchase of $25 or more. Or buy 5 quarts of any Pennzoil motor oil. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Today's train crash in South Carolina was the fourth fatal incident involving an Amtrak train since the start of December. The Amtrak train was on the wrong track, a stretch of track owned by the CSX Railroad, and a short stretch of track that put it where it should not have been was set and locked with a padlock. The Amtrak engineer and conductor were killed. 119 others were taken to area hospitals, some of them in critical condition. A CSX train was sitting on the side rail. No one was on board that train, but it was loaded with new cars on their way to delivery. NBC's broadcast of the Super Bowl suffered a brief hiccup early in the second quarter when the screen went to black. The announcers tossed to a commercial break, so viewers did not know what had happened. Nobody missed any of the action. KABC SoCal weather, mostly clear this evening, then areas of fog overnight with lows in the 50s. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
I'm a squeaky toy, and I've got one job, getting chomped on by this little ankle sniffer. So pardon me for feeling inept compared to Geico, who does so much more. Like, while I'm getting slobbered on, Geico is creating cool technology like their mobile app, which lets people pay their bills or file a claim. Plus, Geico is the fastest-growing auto insurer for the last 10 years. Is it too much for me to ask for one more feature? Fast and friendly claim service like Geico, maybe? Oh, great. I'm getting buried again.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I'm live from inside a perfectly paired gift box from Pro Flowers and Sherry's Berries, and it is big. A frame lowers 24 roses inside. And up top, huge dipped berries are coated with chocolate chips. I do love berries.
This Valentine's Day, think inside the box with a perfectly paired gift. Visit proflowers.com now and enter code 5454 for 20% off gifts over $29. Offer expires 2/13 or while supplies last. Discount cannot be applied to shipping and handling fees. See proflowers.com for details.
Message and data rates may apply.
Guys, this may be the last time you ever have to think about hair loss. Because I'm telling you, Bosley is the real deal. They're giving men their hair back permanently. Their real hair. All it takes to get started on the hair gain train is a single text message. You'll get an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card when you text FUN to 85850. Check them out now. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Dude, this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're America's number one hair restoration expert, ahead of the curve with the latest technology. And the best part, Bosley's solution is permanent. You're going to love what they'll do for your hair. So drop what you're doing long enough to send a text. Get your free information kit and gift card for $250 off by texting FUN to 85850. Don't forget, that's F-U-N to 85850.
Active bass.
Got it. Okay. Sid Levine, The Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC. All right, we're back with the second half of the show. What a fascinating show we're having here. Liz, you had a question
for Jessica. Yeah, very interesting. In the break, we were just discussing, and I had a question, Jessica. I was asking you Being a photojournalist, what do you do with all the photos? Like, are they documented? And you were telling us there's a website, correct?
Yeah. So anytime there's any service member, not just Marines, but any service member who does what I do, they capture those images, whether they be, you know, photos, videos, stories, podcasts. We even have the American Forces Network, which is kind of like our TV station for overseas. They produce that content and they put it online on DVIDS, or it's DVIDS.hub.com. And so that's kind of our archiving site for the content that we have. And it's publicly released. And everybody thinks like it's a big secret to be in the military.
Listen, we have a call from Lynette. Can we get Lynette on the line here? Hello, Lynette.
Hi. Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead, Lynette.
You know, it just is a very disturbing reality that we have these days, this military-industrial complex that we've been warned about by, was it Harry Truman or was it Eisenhower. And that, you know, it is so disturbing. And then we've had people like Dr. King and others. And, of course, Bible scripture warns us, you know, that these are really perplexing times, where there be wars and rumors of wars, according to prophecy. And also, Jesus taught that blessed are the peacemakers. I'm just wondering, you know, when are we going to get back to that kind of thing? Because, you know, nuclear war is really not a nuclear war. We're talking about annihilation of a whole planet. And they have a bill in Congress, I think it's S-200, for no preemptive nuclear war, you know, so that America won't be preemptive in war that we need to be supporting, you know.
Miss, could you give me your name again, please?
Lynette. Is it S-200 or something like that? We need to really be supporting things like that, saying no to preemptive war. That's what time it is. It really is, you know.
Well, there's different views. You know, there's a lot of Christian people in this country who rely on and pray for our service people to protect our country. And many of us believe in peace through strength, that unless we're a strong and vibrant country, we cannot protect the people in our country.
Can I interject? So
I would just say I'm all for peace and love. I think America does so much for so many different countries in our world that and our military doesn't just fight wars. They're there on the scene in disasters. Our military deserves to be respected. I'm so honored to be sitting next to Jessica, and I thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
Is Lynette still on the line? Lynette, where are you from? Where are you calling us from?
From L.A. Can I say one more thing?
Go ahead.
Okay, we were the first ones to drop the nuclear bomb, but then we're the ones that's always pointing the finger saying, don't, you know, have a nuclear arsenal. But then we have to guard against our own military and business interests from being in conflict of interest when we, you know, when we go into all these countries and do things and destabilize governments, you know, in the name of democracy, when it's all about business. And so, you know, we're the ones, we're really the ones that really need a reality check. I mean, we can't preach to them to not have nuclear, and we've got every kind of bomb you can think of.
Lynette, I'm probably going to say something that might anger you or might anger some people, but it actually saved, it's a very fine line here, but it saved a lot of American lives dropping that bomb.
Well, you know, we can't tell everybody else, well, you know, you don't need a bomb and all that kind of stuff. Well, we're steadily building up our arsenal every time you look up. We all need to really just denuclearize. The whole planet needs to do that and send those bombs in outer space to those meteors that might be coming heading our way. That's the way I see it. Everybody needs to take down these nuclear bombs.
Hold on, Lynette. Hold on. Go ahead.
Lynette, how do you feel about North Korea becoming a nuclear state?
They need to stop it, too. We all need to stop it. India, Pakistan, they about to blow themselves to smithereens, and we're up here selling all these bombs. It's a business. I mean, for us in this country.
Well, if it's a business, Lynette, don't you think we should stay competitive?
Pardon me?
If it's a business, don't you think we should stay competitive?
Well, we need to stop selling all this around the world and then tell them, okay, you can't do it. That's the name of this S-200, this note to preemptive nuclear war, stop preemptive nuclear war by, what was it, was his name, goodness. Well, anyways, good Lord.
Well, Lynette, we have to move on, Lynette, but I want to thank you so much for calling. It was a fascinating call. Thank you so much, Lynette. Oh, that's interesting. Interesting call.
It's always a heavy topic, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is. But, and it must be very difficult for you, Jessica, because you're in the room and we all are so grateful of your service. And we've kind of put you in a lion's den in a way.
Well, no, it's interesting to kind of hear everybody's take. And I have to be respectful of, you know, people and what their opinions are, especially about the military. And it's not that I think that they're being rude or hateful. I just don't think they're very educated on what we do and why we do it.
We were also talking in the break. I'm British, so I was brought up on a lot of World War II history between Germany and obviously the UK. So I kind of missed a lot of what happened with Japan. And it was really interesting, like Brad was just saying, 6,000 U.S. Marines were lost, correct?
In one day.
And yeah. 26,000 injuries, from what I can see. I just looked it up on Google. And you've actually visited Japan, haven't you?
I have, and I live there. And I have to say, you know, especially not being in that era, that World War II era, my grandmother was, and she was shocked when she found out I was going to Japan. You know, very shocked. And she's 92 now, bless her heart. But I told her I loved it. I was like, I wish you could come visit me.
I think she was definitely waiting for you to come back though, right?
Yeah. But I thought it was phenomenal. And the Japanese are just so kind. And they have such a mindfulness of others that it's...
the strong ally of the United States.
They are. And I loved seeing kind of the relationship there and how we work with the Japanese Self-Defense Force and whatnot. But, you know, to see such a striking difference. And I went to the Hiroshima Memorial, where the A-Dome was, with the last standing building for World War II when they dropped the bomb. And well, it's a somber feeling. It's
sure.
really...
Well, know. Look, I mean, one of the most desirable vacation sites to go to now is Vietnam.
I would love to go to Vietnam.
I would love to go.
Yeah.
Imagine if you said that in 1968.
Yeah. Very different emotions.
I don't think you'd want to go there.
Isn't that so? I mean, that just shows you how the world has changed. And we can't really hold any grudges or any pain or any hatred for any country, because within time we all become friends again. And it's
1776, the British and the United States and America.
Yeah.
And
well,
Britain
without America,
strongest.
Our history would have been different for sure.
Yeah. And America, yes, in World War II. But Germany now is one of the strongest allies of the United States as well. And if you had said that in 1941 or something, I mean, people think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
And so everybody does, you know, in time, it all heals, I guess. Time heals all wounds.
So Russia and Korea in the next, 20, 30 years, we'll all be rushing to.
Well, Russia, I thought we had good relations with Russia, with Reagan.
Do you notice,
I think very good relations with Russia, isn't there? I don't know.
The common theme, though, is America. America sometimes will fight a war with a country, but then we'll make friends with them, like Japan, like Vietnam. I mean, America is, I think, an open, embracing country, because even after a war, there was a level of forgiveness. And we work through these things and become allies with these countries.
Well, the Marines, the United States servicemen in South Korea are there for how many years since?
Since 52.
Since 52. Mm-hmm. And it'll be probably forever.
Yes.
And although in Germany, there's a huge base that we have the United States servicemen, you know, all over the world that we have to help and to serve and to protect their interests as well as American interests. And, like, for instance, I've never been there, but in Germany, Jessica, what is the name of the base there? Do you remember?
I don't recall. I know we have a presence there.
It's
have a
huge.
Global presence. But I don't believe it's a Marine base. There's probably a U.S. naval base. I could check it out.
So it's a naval base.
A lot of the soldiers who get injured in Afghanistan are flown there first.
I know about that, actually. They're taken to Germany, so they're mentally evaluated and not allowed back into America, I believe. Is this correct? Until they are given the okay.
Yes, I've heard that.
And I know that in London, I did meet some U.S. military that were actually in a hospital for to get better in London before they were allowed back.
Oh, it's actually the air base, so it's Ramstein Air Force Base. Yeah.
Okay.
Jessica, I have another question. Yeah. So last week we had Sergeant Chris Sampson here, didn't we, from the U.S. Marines? And great guys. And I have to say, I asked him a question. I said, was there anything that he was scared of, you know, in his training?
Oh, yeah.
And he said that he was very honest and very vulnerable, which I loved. He said that he couldn't swim when he signed up for the U.S. Marines. So he really had to learn that pretty fast, didn't he, Sid? Was it 2 days or something he had?
In 2 days he did it.
In 2 days. Was there anything when you were training to be a U.S. Marine, was there anything that you were scared of? Was there any mental fear that you had to overcome?
I'm terrified of heights.
Okay.
So they have what is called the confidence course, and it's essentially, I don't even remember how tall it was. It seemed like 100 feet. I'm sure I could find the exact height, but you are having to climb and maneuver over these logs. I mean, it's this massive tower, and you don't have anything strapped onto you. And that's why it's called the confidence course, because, I mean, it scares the bejeebers out of you.
I did the Welsh Royal Fusiliers course. I know nobody ever believes this about me. And I'm scared of kind of not being buried alive or going under. But I kind of get claustrophobic, and we had to kind of crawl through these tunnels of water in mud, and we literally could only have that much space to breathe, so we had to tilt our head sideways to crawl through, and I've never forgotten that. Do you do anything similar?
Not particularly, but I know during the officer candidates course, OCS, they go what's called through the Quigley, and it's just this nasty swamp infested kind of, and there's a scenario in there where the officer candidates have to, you know, go through this nasty tunnel, and I mean, it's submerged with water, and it's stinky, and it's gross.
And I think at one point you actually have to go under to get back up. Yeah, I don't know how I ever did it, Sid. No idea.
Oh, God.
I went straight back into my high heels afterwards. So I really do take my hats off to you.
So, Jessica, what are your plans in the Marine Corps for your career?
So I really love the public aspect of my job and getting to interact and meet people. And I've changed so much from, you know, the 17, 18-year-old that I was. I was a very timid, shy, kind of nerdy person who just played video games and I didn't really do much. I wasn't very active to now how I am now. So given my job, I really do want to kind of go into a civil affairs position and work with the security guard. They have the special duty assignment, which is Marine Security Guard, and you get assigned to any embassy in the world, three different stations every year, to work there with the embassy. And it's a really great networking opportunity to work with our allies, our allied countries, and kind of see different faces around the planet. So I kind of want to see how that goes.
Your rank, do you want to get...
I do. A lot of people are really antsy to be promoted, and I like marinating. This is probably the best rank in the Marine Corps, sergeant and gunnery sergeant. They're just the best ranks because I'm, as a non-commissioned officer, I'm in charge of my junior Marines and leading the way for my staff and COs who are looking to me for the structure and position and guidance and development of my junior Marines. So I'm kind of like that threshold. And so I have the most fun at this rank. You know, I give the most orders at this rank, but I learn a lot at this rank as well. So,
do you speak at schools? And
I do. So I'm not an active recruiter. I don't try to, you know, bring anybody into the Marine Corps, but I'm asked to go to a lot of schools. And we went to Beverly Hills High School, actually, right down the street, and we did this amazing class talk. And I got to tell them about my story to these kids, you know, and they're very well-to-do, you know, families, especially in Beverly Hills. But
I'm not sure how much recruiting you would get done from Beverly Hills High School. Not that I'm being judgmental, but
I mean, it's not many.
You might go to West Point.
Yeah. I think that's the interesting thing about Southern California and Orange County and recruiting here. You have, you know, rough areas like Compton, Downey, some parts there, even Lakewood. But and then you go to Laguna Hills High School or Beverly Hills High School, you know, very well-to-do, intelligent kids.
Do you have certain areas where you see more kids, teenagers signing up for the U.S. Marines? Can you work it out like that or not?
I think it's different in every area because you go to Mission Viejo, San Clemente. There's still, you know, really good aspects about those neighborhoods. They're very wealthy.
Sure.
But you have a lot of kids who just want to join because they're patriotic. They just want to serve their country.
That's beautiful.
It is.
9/11, that happened. A lot of
Absolutely. Mission Viejo Very High cool. School, we work with them a lot, and they just love having the Marines there. And then you go to some schools, and, you know, Beverly Hills High School is a really difficult school to work with. They were nice to us, but it's hard to communicate what the military does when people just don't understand. So that's kind of our opportunity to, like, let them know. Like,
do you get a lot of girls that – because you talk and you're there?
I do sometimes, and I have some ladies who message me, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram. They follow me, and they ask me questions about joining because they're nervous or they're scared. And I actually flew to Paris Island with my sergeant major just to talk to these ladies and, like, get them through. Like, hey, you guys are, you know, 12 weeks out of 13 weeks. You're 7 weeks out of 13 weeks. You're your first week in. Like, don't give up. You guys got to understand that you can't give up. So,
what's the percentage of women signing up and men? Do we know that?
I'm sure we have a statistic for it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's definitely a lot lower. I would say out of the future Marines that we have, in roughly 100 to 120 people, you know, we only have 30 to 45. Who are actually females. So it's definitely a lot lower, but it's tough. It's really tough. And I think we're definitely dealing with a difficult era nowadays who, you know, I'm a part of that generation, the millennial generation, but, you know, it's different. It's different.
It's interesting you're talking about certain communities, and recruiting in certain communities. One of my churches was in San Marino. Mm-hmm. San Marino was the birthplace of General George Patton. And probably one of the most famous generals in the history of the country. Mm-hmm. And when I was serving a church there, one of our congregants' son, his father served in Vietnam with distinction and received various medals. And the son always wanted to be a Marine. And unfortunately, we had a memorial service for him. He was killed in the Fallujah battle. And so I would say that there probably isn't a community that has not been served by the Marines, mm-hmm. Certainly hasn't made a sacrifice. You probably could get statistics on, you know, certain areas and et cetera. But there are stories from every walk of life, mm-hmm. In terms of service in the country.
Well, let me ask you, Brad. You have a daughter.
I do. A daughter and a son.
A daughter and a son. And they wanted, let's say there was... It was war, and they wanted to enlist. How would you feel about that?
As a father, I would obviously want them to be safe, and I would want to strike some deal with somebody to give me a guarantee that they would be safe. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as a father who's learned a lot of hard lessons along the way, I also know that empowering my daughter and my son is really the greatest act of love that you can do. And if they came to me and said, this is a part of my heart, this is who I am, this is what I want to do, this is a sense that I want to serve my country and serve in the military. This actually happened with my son. And he was in the middle of some junior college studies, and he said, Dad, I want to enlist in the Navy. I said, well, let's talk about that. We got through the talk, and I said, go for it. Go for it.
That's great.
And it really boils down, particularly the older they get, mm-hmm. the tighter you hold on, the further they're going to be away from
right.
you.
Right. What about you, David?
Same question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a son who's 17. Hmm. And so he's...
I can talk to him for you.
Here's the deal. My son, Michael. Hi, Michael. just a wonderful kid. He's in his senior year at Agoura High School, and but he's a genius. He's a straight A kid all through school. Mm-hmm. So he's into computers. He's applied to MIT, Stanford. You know, so he's just a real bright guy. But if he had come to me, even with what his pedigree is and what his grades have been and the classes he's taken. And if he wanted to go in the military, I would encourage him. I'd say, son, if that's what you want to do, I'm behind you 100%. But I would encourage him, since he is so gifted, to go to officer training school, you know, to go to college first and then become an officer, because I think his mental capacity would really assist the military in that way.
So you would tell him to wait?
I'd tell him to go finish college,
right,
which what you have to do, I think, to go to officer training school, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Have a college degree, and then go for it, sure. Because I think he'd fit in better there. So military's fine with me. I just like to see him fit in.
What about you, Liz?
What's the question? I don't have children.
What if you did?
I don't know. Don't know. Well, firstly, I'm not American, am I? So I have to be an American citizen. There's so many ifs there, Sid. What about you?
If it would be a tremendous stress, but if I had a son or a daughter that expressed an interest in doing it, I would have to back them 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it would be a tremendous stress in my heart.
I have to say, in my family, Lance Corporal William Fuller was the first Welshman to have the VC. So, you know, my surname is known for that where I'm from. So for me, I'm very proud of that story. So if I did have a son or daughter, I couldn't stop them because I feel like this has been a very important story in my family, you know? So it wouldn't be something that I could stop, but I wouldn't like it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tremendous stress, I would think, for every parent.
It's a huge dedication, isn't it? And it can be a sacrifice.
And I think the context is awfully important about this. In World War II, after Pearl Harbor, there were probably 10 people in the country who didn't want to sign up. Everybody wanted them. My dad couldn't make it fast enough to the recruiting office.
That's right.
And it was part of the culture. It was part of the context of that particular war. You saw something different again in Vietnam. And when you look at the numbers of people who are serving now in a voluntary army, the draft hasn't been around for a very, very long time, but now in a voluntary army, 100% of the people who are in the military today want to be there because they are volunteering to do it. It's the context, I think, and if there was, God forbid, something horrendous unfold, you would see a lot of people wanting to enlist and protect the country.
I want to bring up a point to that I feel is really amazing to see, because you see people who are very scared, especially their children who are joining, because they think they're going to be killed. But, you know, you walk out of your house nowadays, and I feel like there's almost a danger inherent to just being here in America sometimes.
You're right.
And it's not just to, you know, thinking you're going to go to combat. I have never been deployed. I've never been in combat, and I've been in for 5 years, you know, and I may not see that. And there's a lot of Marines like that. But I want to bring up a recent topic about the high school teacher who, you know, had a student wearing a U.S. Marine T-shirt.
Yes,
and he berated him.
And he just berated him.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was. Yeah. But I saw in the comments and the shares, and because I had people messaging on our Facebook page, the Marine Corps Facebook page, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen this? You should talk to him. And, you know, we can't really do anything about it. But seeing how supportive of people are when something viral happens like that, it's really nice to kind of see America get back together and support its military.
Well, straight out forward, that how I feel is...
Yeah.
That teacher, I don't want to get into it. Listen, we're almost done with the show. We've just got a few seconds left. Thank you, David Sunderland.
Thank you
so
Sid.
Much. Jessica, Sergeant Jessica Quesada,
thank you
so very much for coming here.
It was great to be on the show
with you. Brad Calhoun, thank you so
Sid.
Big time.
Always great.
Liz.
Uh-huh, another
Liz
week done.
Fuller, thank you so much, Liz.
See you next and week.
And Allie Reyes, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. All right. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Fascinating show. Take care.
This show furnished by Sid Levine.